Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Maya. She has recently written a book called The Power of Illusion, which she says helps one release fear. And she has an easy-to-use technique which can be used to release fear from the unconscious mind. Are you there, Maya?
Hi, Mike.
You are
fine.
Thank you
for having me
today.
Now,
just clear this up. Are you Maya or Maya?
I'm Maya.
You are Maya. Okay, that's fine. Obviously, I've read a little bit on your website about you, and I gather that you must have gone through quite a traumatic period in your life, apparently up to the age of around 30, where you were evidently, as you described it, like a hamster in a wheel going round and round, I suppose, not getting anywhere particular. Tell us about the period that led up to your revelations and how you came to get onto this particular subject.
Well, for me, as a child, childhood was not fun, and didn't have a great marriage. So I didn't understand why so many things were happening to me, because when I looked around, people seemed to be relatively more happier than I was. So I just didn't understand why. You know, I have a logical brain. I have a good logical brain. I'm an engineer, so I like to analyze things. And I decided, okay, I do not know who God is. Let's find God and ask God why he messed up my life. That's how this whole journey started. I came to a point where I needed some answers. And I started tentatively attending spiritual talks because I was not into that at that point. And met some wonderful teachers from many traditions, Advaita, Buddhism, Zen. And what I was asked to do in that process was to look within me. And every time they asked that, I would run away because I didn't want to look within me. I had so much of baggage, so much of so many issues and fears. I really didn't want to sit in silence, because if I sat in silence, everything would come up. So I would distract myself. You know, I went to the corporate America thing. I enjoy corporate, but you know, that became my only thing. I would run away from life, and the search progressed. And then I started seeing all that was within me that I was not seeing. I saw my arrogance. I saw my jealousy, my competitiveness. I saw how manipulative I am. And it's never fun to see all this, Mike, but my beloved teacher just gently prodded me to go deeper. To live in truth became my mantra. I decided I'm going to live in truth. If God is somewhere in this truth business, I'm going to live in truth and find out what that means, what Creator is. So living in truth sounded great as a concept to start with, but it meant that I had to clean my house big time. It meant a great deal of humility, of being forced to be humble, to see that stuff within me. And as I saw it, my teacher told me, she shared a method, how you can shift everything from the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind carries limited beliefs from this lifetime as well as from past. And all that is needed is to see that fully. If you don't see your stuff, we will not heal it, because you have to see it 100%. I had to see my arrogance, Mike, 100%. It was a sad experience to see that. And, you know, to see the damage done to other people's lives unconsciously. And through this process of, you know, this method of having a conversation with the unconscious mind and letting it go, I released a lot of my shadows, what I call shadows, a lot of it. I started getting the money I wanted. I lost weight. I let go of a lot of health challenges, because every health challenge has an emotional component to it. And I just had to find out what the emotional component was and release it. You know, this is a powerful method that my teacher taught us. And slowly the cleaning up started, and I discovered happiness. All of a sudden, I started having happiness within me that existed just for being. I didn't need anybody to take care of me. know, right. I didn't want anyone to feed me. That neediness started slowly dying away. And I started loving people more. And the way, for me, the way love happened was I had to love my shadows and have compassion for myself because others are invariably reflecting our stuff. And yeah. If we are in denial of our core stuff, we will be judgmental about the people who interact with us because they're all our reflections. So, you know, and also there's more compassion for the people. I can understand. I'm still a student. I will always be a student until I exit. But in a much better place. My mantra is living in truth every moment.
Yes, yes. I mean, just to go back to the period before you had your revelations, what was the main problem through your life up to that time that made you perhaps feel judgmental or angry or whatever happened to you? Was that anything that you brought with you, or was it to do with your childhood?
It was, you know, born in a family where emotions were not important. Mm. And for me, it was a karmic thing. My power was taken away from me because it was in hindsight when I could go to a lifetime and see what I had done to realize, yeah. Oh, that was payback time. That was my cleanup time. For me, it was karmic. In a society where women were not treated as equal, where women were degraded, that was my experience. It is not the same for everybody who's from India. This is mine because I created that reality for my learning. And
right.
Once, when I was in the middle of that, it was traumatic, very traumatic growing up. But, you know, once I got out of it and started my work and I could see how I was creating my reality by my thoughts and emotions, I started taking ownership of a few of the things in my life. And
yes,
then eventually
yes.
I did the past life and I saw, oh yeah, I have acted out in another life and I'm cleaning it up right now. Okay, I'm done, so I'm happy.
Yes. The difficulty must be for people that if they believe they brought something with them which they need to work on, is being able to identify what it is. You seem to have recognized that when you had this sudden change. Was that brought about by something within you or things outside of you as well?
You mean that caused the change in my...
Yes, yes.
...the person?
Yes.
It is both. I feel that my soul needed to be ready for this change, so that I can attract the right teacher to help me. I had to be ready because I lived in India, which is quite a spiritual place, and I was not attracted to any spiritual teachers, you know, the 24 years I was in India. And I see people from United States traveling to India in search of a teacher. So I was not ready. I could have been surrounded by the most enlightened masters, and I just didn't recognize them. So for
yeah,
me,
yeah.
I had to really come to a point of no return. I had to come to a point of, okay, let's stop right here. Something is not working. Enough is enough. I had to come to the point of desperation and a plea. It was a prayer. And, you know, the earnestness, Mike. Earnest. I was really earnest. I wanted to find out what the answers were. And if any student has that earnestness and, you know, has integrity to really look into it, I think it will be easier. We don't have to be in denial. But I don't have a problem with denial. Denial was created so that we all can have some time until we are ready to face the truth. So it's an okay thing where I'm concerned. Because if I had seen something...
In your travels when you met your... teachers.
Yeah.
Did that bring you in touch with Sai Baba at all?
I've been intrigued, but as a child, I remember visiting a friend's home where they had honey just coming out of a picture of a goddess, and I was totally intrigued. It would just pour out, and there were Sai Baba devotees, but I have not met him, not met Sai Baba, but I have seen these miracles.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you didn't really go for very long with any one particular teacher. You probably searched around and took a little bit from here and there. Now, when you spoke about finding happiness, does that come through accepting others as they are?
For me, happiness came. The first thing was owning that my happiness depends on me. It's a work I need to do for myself, and then taking ownership of my limitations. That is the first step. Second step, when I could take the ownership of my limitations and see it with honesty, I could have a better relationship with the outside world. My reality changed. And the third thing for me, which deepened my happiness, was my connection to the Creator. I didn't want a concept. I didn't want God to be a concept. And I had to find out what that is within me. And, you know, I'm still a student, but I've touched upon that. And for me, touching that gives me happiness. It just fills the void within. And finally, the happiness that I feel that will completely fulfill me is doing work, serving myself in integrity and in serving the world. Somehow it's coming together. I just, you know, everything looking around gives me happiness. So it starts with inside and then it's moving outside.
Yes, yes. You said you like to give other people full freedom to like you or not. So you don't take any thing personally if someone doesn't agree with you or your views of life or the way you're living it. You accept that they would have their way. And you're obviously happy with yours.
Mike, there are times when my ego does get in the way. Definitely it does, especially someone who's close to me. I have this method where within a day's time, I can just understand what it is and let it go so that energy of, you know, whatever issues I have with ego gets shifted. I act consciously every day in doing my writing work and releasing stuff. And once I do it, not at all. I allow people to give them the freedom because I want that freedom. I want the freedom to like someone or not like somebody. And I give them that because if I waited on them to like me, then I won't live my truth. I won't be able to speak up against injustice that's happening in corporate America, I have done. You know, so I had to do that. I had to walk through painful lessons to let them be angry at me. I just had to do it. And it was not easy, Mike. I had to do a lot of my self-love. Started growing in that process when I could stand up for truth and allow, you know, people I like to not want to be with me.
That's wonderful. Now, your book is called The Power of Illusion, and it's to help people to release their fear. Are you suggesting that all fear is an illusion?
Let me explain what illusion is that I understand as I understand it. Illusion is something that we create with our thoughts and emotions. If I think that I'm a failure and I have the emotion of fear underneath that, I will create that. If I put enough energy into it, everything I touch will fail. If I have a strong belief, maybe my parents gave that. You know, so that is how illusion is created. Fear is a component that can create a negative reality. At the same time, if I want a loving partner in my life, and I have very crystal clear views on what he must have and what he must not, what I will not tolerate, and then my emotions that behind it are not fear. But, you know, positive, I can do it, I'm doing it, love, the same illusion will create that reality for you. So illusion is not, fear is an emotion. It's an emotion which can give you a bad reality because fear, the power of fear is the minute you think it manifests in a faster pace than anything else. Fear can just help manifest things pretty fast. It has a lot of energy to it. So illusion is what we create with a fear or with a positive emotion.
Right. How does your advice, your guidance, fit in, say, for example, with people who have addictions?
Mm. So for me, I dealt with my addiction to sugar and carbs. The way I did it was I wrote a letter to my unconscious mind to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was, why it was addicted to chocolate. I had to have chocolate every day. And I would write something like, dear unconscious mind, what is the reason for you to go for chocolate every day? And when I really started this conversation, I understood for me, chocolate meant love. Didn't have a lot of love and as a child and growing up. So for me, I needed something to feed me. That's how it is. When you don't get some core emotions until we heal, we feed ourselves with something, some other alternate, some substitute. And every addiction has an emotional component to it. And I had to find out all the stuff that was within me that was craving for love. And chocolate gave me that. It gave me that for me. That was it. And I had to rewrite to my unconscious mind and educate it and let it know that was then, this is now. Things happened in the past. Yes, let it go. I had to do this many times. I had to do it many times. And I wrote to my unconscious mind very clearly and let it know that I am the one in charge of giving love for myself, not the outside world, because they are all healing in different levels. Our parents are not enlightened. Just because they are parents doesn't mean that they have to be enlightened.
No.
They are just human beings who are like tripping over and learning lessons and making mistakes. I had to give that logical aspect to my unconscious so that it can forgive what happened then. And then own the aspect that I am responsible for having love within. It is not an outside thing that I can get from. And as this work progressed, and slowly, with the help of my beloved teacher, my teacher's name is also Maya, I was able to let go of the addiction to chocolate. I started loving myself.
Yeah. Well, I like chocolate, but I don't feel a need to let go of it. But then, on the other hand, perhaps I don't eat too much for my own good. But you don't mind people eating a little bit of chocolate?
Oh, no, I love chocolate. Just now there is moderation. That time it was, I had to have it every day. If I didn't have it, I would get upset. So there was an addiction there.
Yeah. Right. One of the items that I believe you cover in your book is what you call letting go of ownership. Now, does that apply to material things, to feeling that you own other people? Explain a little bit about that one.
Letting go of, I missed the last word, Mike.
Ownership.
Ownership. Ah, yes, 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 yes. I like that chapter. Letting go of ownership was, I found, when my ego took a step back, creation was brilliant. When ego got in and said, oh, I created this. I'm too good to be true. I'm better than you. I can design better than you. My work is far more superior than you. My teaching is better than, it doesn't matter. When the ego stepped in, the brilliance of that work just dimmed. So as I was working on this, I found that when we simply understand that what is moving through us is a brilliant creative force, the source, and as long as our unconscious mind is completely open to allowing the source to move through us and touch us in every aspect of our life, whether it is working in corporate or painting or cleaning the house, doesn't matter. When this pure source can move and without interruption, the work is brilliant and people benefit from it. Because everybody knows when two people interact, they know if I have an agenda. When I teach, when I start claiming, my I get a little egoistic and, oh, I'm so good, you know, my teachings, and become attached to it, then I step away from truth. I just step away from truth. So when I open my my palms and I just affirm, I know nothing, I'm open, what happens is there's literally an opening where unconscious allows more information to seep through. Remember, the unconscious, for me, my understanding of unconscious is it is what sits between the source and you. And if the unconscious has a lot of filters in between fears, you will not get messages from God. The clairvoyance, everything would be shut off. So right. When I let go of ownership, there was truth moved through me in my work without any hindrance.
Right. Now, you've touched upon something that obviously needs an explanation here.
Mm.
You speak of preventing energy drainage. But what is it we do in our lives that probably wastes our energy, and how do we control that?
So the more a person, everybody has what I call cords, energetic cords between people, and it is done willingly because you want to help another. A mother, you know, does that for a child, or the partners, they connect to each other, so they get energy from the other when they're low. But the problem happens is when it is done unconsciously, and the person also can drain your energy and can put negative thoughts into your head. When you're constantly thinking of someone again and again and again, and they come to your consciousness, you want to think if you have some cords. What I do is I call upon angels to cut it, Archangel Michael and Raphael. To cut my cords, I do an exercise, conscious exercise of all the people that that come into my consciousness repeatedly, and I just don't want that. The minute that is cut, they will stop appearing in your consciousness, and the cords can get built again, and over time it goes away. The way I shield myself when I teach or when I go out is, for every spiritual student, this is true. The more spiritual you become, the more you live in truth, your body becomes lighter. What I mean by that is you become very energetic. You start feeling other people's emotions by just being in their field. You know where they are, where they are stuck, or their fears are. And that is, you need some protection at that point. I couldn't go to a mall. It was painful for me to go to a mall. And I stopped traveling. And then I started building shield. I have a shield on my website, powerofillusion.com, in one of the pages. You can just imagine a brilliant either white light or, you know, whatever color that you're drawn to around you. I just, with a thought, with the power of one thought, that shield can come up and I go outside with that. And when my energy goes down, the shield falls away and I remember my body is very sensitive. I know when my shield is going down and I immediately bring it up. And over time it gets stronger, and I do, and now I have energy to do all that I want to do. I'm no longer giving away my energy unconsciously, but consciously I do. When I teach, I do it.
Yes. Are you a healer? Do you do healing for people?
I don't do any of the techniques. But yes, I open the chakras, and when I'm working with people, the emotions are held in the body. I try to open it so that it really become conscious of it, and we can talk about it.
Right. Yes. I didn't realize from reading your notes that from those comments you've just made, you do give people consultations then.
Yes, I do. People come home, or we do it over the phone.
Yes. Right. Is there information on that on your website?
Yes, the information is on my website, my home
number.
Oh, it
is, okay.
It is,
Obviously missed that little bit then. Now, something that would interest a lot of people at this time is you have said that you manifested a very large gift in financial abundance.
Mm.
In fact, you got the home you wanted, the body you desired, and joy through that method. Now, how do you actually attract what you need in the way of, say, material support, which I think you're referring to when you say financial abundance, the ability to be able to buy what you need rather than what you don't need. Tell us a bit about that.
So in manifestation, in order for your desires, for our desires to manifest, all fears must come out. If we did not have the fears, we would have manifested it a long time back. We wouldn't be struggling. So when I wanted money, I really needed some money at a certain point in my life, and nothing was happening. And so I did a lot of writing work, Mike, this method of talking to the unconscious mind, where I had this very limited view about money. I just call it the vow of poverty. I felt that I couldn't have money. I just wasn't capable of making that kind of money. I was not worthy of it. I mean, I didn't even know all this existed consciously, but in my unconscious, I got a lot of information. And I really had to work at that every day. Second thing is put energy every day to manifesting the desires. Because manifestation depends on a couple of things. One is remove the fear. Second, put energy every day. And what does that mean? It means taking action every day. I had this wonderful poster made out on, you know, what I wanted, the amount of money I wanted. So one day I put $100,000 and put it there. And every day when I wake up, and I would look at that check every day and claim it. Thank you, Father, for this. This is mine. And I would claim it and claim it. The thing is, for an unconscious mind, when it looks at something many times, it becomes a reality. It allows that in. And I started doing my work. I was doing my writing work, and it just happened. One day, there was this document lying around, and I found that I had some shares in a company I worked for I didn't even know existed. And it was a little over 100K. And,
oh, wow.
And so I had to walk through my fears. At the same time, there were things, for me, I wanted a partner for a long time in my life. And I never got that what I desired for many years. I never met the right person. Well, I was trying, but the fears were not done yet. And I had to learn a few lessons. Completion, God has his time. In manifestation, we have our part, and I believe God has his part. And the patience is needed. So I had to really work through a lot of fears these several years to manifest the man I wanted.
Mm.
And that took time. This money thing, I didn't have a lot of stuff going on, I believe, in my unconscious, so I got that within 6 months. Partner took a few years.
Mm. When you met this person, did he match up to your vision of what you wanted?
Yes, so far, yes. I put my teacher was very specific, very particular about me making a list of what I must have in my partner and what I will not tolerate. And she asked me to make that list and look at it every day because I didn't want my unconscious mind to sabotage me by ignoring all those qualities I really didn't want. But it's amazing. It is coming to a close fit. We create this truly, you know, makes me, you know, it affirms for me that we create our own reality. What we put out, we get back. And the thing, what I found, Mike, was the more I lived in truth, manifestation was faster. It was like God was not holding back.
You've probably heard of and maybe have even read the book called The Secret, which is also based on telling people how to acquire what they want. But the general advice is to think in terms of already having what you want rather than saying, I want.
Right.
You visualize that you already have it. Now, is that the way you work as well?
I see the truth in that. When you say, I want, you're creating a want there. One of the things my teacher shared is to claim it. This is mine. Thank you. So the way you can claim it is through unconscious likes pictures. putting it out in writing in front on the bedroom wall or refrigerator, just many places, all that you desire, and looking at it every day and saying, this is mine, thank you. Mm. And working at the fears every day. And, you know, having gratitude that that's happening. And another thing that we do is, which I like doing is, you know, daydreaming, closing my eyes and going into the place where I'm actually seeing that happening and I'm feeling the joy of it and, you know, getting, feeling it and manifesting it in my thoughts.
Right. Yes, I truly believe that is the way to achieve it. Do you believe in karma?
Oh, yeah. Yes,
you know,
I do.
I thought you might. Now, how do you deal with karma in the sense that, let's take the example you quoted here, that you were looking for a companion that matched up with what you wanted. Supposing your karma was such that you weren't meant to meet such a person, I mean, can you sort of judge where karma comes in and perhaps sometimes say to yourself, I don't think I'll really get what I want.
Right, right. So karma in my life was a reality because I saw the pain of it. I just had a very painful life for the past 32 or so years. And what I believe about karma is, it is just an opportunity. Sorry, Mike, you want to say something?
Sorry?
Shall I continue?
I didn't quite catch what you said then, so I had to ask you to repeat it.
Oh, okay. Karma exists, but you can. But we have the free will to prolong the suffering by being in denial.
Yes.
When I look at people and the suffering, whether it's cancer or whether it is an abusive relationship, all that is needed, karma ends the minute you get your lesson. When you truly open your unconscious mind and you're completely open to saying, oh my gosh, this is my lesson here. This is what I'm not seeing. This is why I created this person. Until you come to that place, your karma will influence you. So karma's timeline is set by the individual. Free will plays a role there. So does karma necessarily have to be this long-drawn suffering event? No, I don't believe that. I just don't. For that, people, humans are not, you know, it's not our second nature to look at our shadows every day. But if we can do that, every day make it a point to look at our shadows and own it and release it, suffering goes down.
Right, yes. You mentioned the fact that we can actually have permission, as you call it, to be wrong and open to learning from everyone. So in other words, you don't believe that there is obviously anything wrong in having experiences, and in so doing, I guess you would say that we shouldn't feel any guilt about having them.
Now, you mean spiritual experiences, Mike?
Sorry?
Yeah, are you referring to spiritual experiences?
Afraid.
Or any experiences?
No, not really, no. No, I don't feel that I am.
No, Mike, could you repeat the question again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I was asking you if I can remember what I said now. Oh, dear me.
Let me try to explain what I was actually coming to.
Forget that one just for the moment. I might remember again and ask you a little bit later.
Okay.
You were saying earlier on that we need to live in truth and then our body becomes lighter.
Yeah.
Is that because we keep our body in better harmony and balance and therefore it becomes lighter and we have an energy around us that can actually protect us and keep us healthy? Is that the basis of living in truth?
Yes, there is that too. What I have observed in my experiences, when we live in truth, we suddenly open ourselves to allow light to fill in our body, every cell of our being. And all of a sudden, what happens is we find that we can't eat the food that we ate before, and we are drawn to more food that can really nourish the body and not so much the junk food. It's a natural evolution. Nothing is forced. And the more light fills into the body, it's like there's a cleanup. I call it God taking residence. That's the only way I could see that. It's like the unconscious has opened itself and released the fears so that the divine light and the source can move through you. And that is a process of enlightenment, the more and more that happens. And once that movement happens, your lifestyle changes. You're drawn to things you never would have thought of before. You become more conscious of the body. And, you know, it is a natural, it's a beautiful process.
Right. Okay, I can go back to what I asked you a little earlier on. I've remembered what it was I was asking you. You mentioned about having an open-hearted conversation with full permission to be wrong and open to learning from everyone. So my question was there that we obviously come to the earth to experience, and sometimes we make mistakes. So what I'm asking you is, should we feel guilty in that case about the mistakes we make, or should we automatically forgive ourselves?
Oh, no. It's, we are all students, and we are here to trip, fall down, get up, master the lesson, move on. But somehow we all got this program that we are not supposed to fail, fear of failure. If you have that belief in your unconscious that you can't be imperfect, you can't have a failure, then the suffering comes every time we trip. But it is inevitable. We are going. That's how we learn. It's like, you know, trying to getting onto the bicycle the first time. You're going to fall down, and you get up and keep going.
Yeah.
And it's the same with life. We forget sometimes that we are students. Doesn't matter how old we are always students. We are mastering. We came here to master all that we wanted to master this lifetime. So for the forgiving part, Mike, it truly comes with self-love. I found that I was very hard on myself. Many years of walking in truth, I just couldn't deal with the failures or seeing my shadows. It was difficult for me to see my shadows. Every time I saw it, I would feel ashamed of myself. And my teacher gently helped me understand how to have more self-love. And for me, self-love came from really when you live in truth so much, your heart center opens. And when the heart center opens, we touch on what is called divine love. I call it the source, the love of this creator. Only then did my self rest. Until then, I was searching outside. So first step is living in truth. Second step, the heart center opens when we can live in truth. It is being, because truth is born there in the heart center. And then we touch upon love. And then self-love becomes a reality after that.
Yes. There are a number of teachings that actually say that before we can love other people, we have to love ourselves first. That seems to make good sense to me, which is really, I think, what you're saying, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. My experience is everyone is reflecting our stuff. And if we are in denial about our core stuff, we will reject the other person. So once we get into this pattern of seeing our stuff, peace on earth is a definite possibility at that point, because you no longer get defended when you see another person. When you look at someone who's acting out arrogant, you can look within and, okay, where am I arrogant? You know, and own it and let it go. And when you own it, you have compassion for the other person, because you no longer come from the place of, how could you be arrogant? You come from the place of, oh, I know why you're arrogant, because you're insecure too. I understand that, you know. So there is compassion immediately. There is.
Right. Now, you mentioned that people should have an exit plan for all situations. Isn't that rather difficult to put in place in advance before you actually know the situation that you're in?
I think what I mentioned was people sometimes have an exit situation where we don't get intimate. And the teaching there was to not have that, to get into a relationship fully, open the heart fully without thinking about, you know, I need to protect myself. No, let me not go deeper than this. Let me shield myself at this point. Let's just open fully. Be completely vulnerable to the person in your life or whoever you're interacting with. So every, in relationship, we sometimes do that. We all have this invisible wall beyond which, you know, if partners don't go. Because after that, it is grounds for being hurt. And that is not needed. That exit is not needed. Just take off the wall and just keep going. Keep going. Hold on to each other. Keep going. At the same time, I've seen at work, too. People truly don't give their, you know, I didn't do that. I didn't give my heart fully. Yeah. I always held a part of me. I was not that committed to the job. I had my reasons for that. I didn't want to do it and all kinds of stuff. Mm. But giving myself fully to every interaction, allowing myself to be fully truthful, fully open, to be there, present, without trying to exit from there, without trying to protect myself. I don't need to protect myself anymore. Who am I protecting myself from? Other people? Well, other people are students too.
Yes, yes. I think it's true to say, though, that in relationships, perhaps most people fear being rejected, don't they?
Yeah. I felt that a lot. I felt that a lot in my life. And Mike, I truly had to write many times for this one. I had to write about this fear of being rejected because that fear existed in my consciousness. I would create that reality where every time I would get rejected, at work my ideas would be rejected. In a discussion with someone, I was never appreciated for what I was bringing to the conversation. So I had to write about it really, to understand why my unconscious was creating this rejection constantly. You know, it doesn't have logic, and I had to let go of something I got as a child, which in the situation I was in, I got a program from there, and I had to let go of that fear of rejection. And then I had to start proving to myself that I can live in truth and allow another person to not like me, and I'm not lost. What part of me truly gets rejected? I had to ask that question. What part of me? So when I started really doing practical things, like standing up to a manager and telling if he's abusing his power, standing up to the directors and telling people are overworked, and going to the movement of people rejecting me and me writing it and letting it go, I did had to do that many times to finally be okay with, I'm cool. You know, I'm going to speak my truth. I love myself. I love myself. I love myself. Every time I speak up, my self-love goes soaring through the roof, and I'm happy. No one is going to be able to reject me. What are they rejecting? What are they rejecting? The ideas of who I am, which is an illusion in the first place. Because they will never know who I am. It's their concept of who I am. So go ahead, reject me. You're just rejecting your own concept. You will never know who I am.
Mm. Right. It's apparent that you strongly believe that we need to start understanding what is in our unconscious mind. Now, how can we do that? I mean, one would think that if it was in the unconscious mind, it would be very difficult to find out what it is. How do you approach that?
So the dominant hand is wired to the conscious mind. I'm a right-handed person, so my right hand is the conscious mind. The less dominant hand is what is wired to the unconscious. So when you're writing write to the unconscious is the conscious writes to the unconscious with the right hand for me, and the unconscious responds with the lesser dominant hand. And that is the way this conversation gets started with unconscious. And then ultimately, there are some, in chapter 3 of my book, The Power of Illusion, I have given wonderful examples about getting money, getting more money, and losing weight or living in truth, all the different fears, how I have handled it by this method of writing. So there is a sample there. I think there's one on my website too, powerofillusion.com.
Yeah.
So when you write this way, this is simple. That's how it is wired. And you can you start having a conversation. You can start today, you know, something that's troubling you. Ask the unconscious why it is creating that. The problem here is the unconscious mind or the ego thinks that's in charge. But this method basically is educating the unconscious to say, no, that's not truth. And taking it to have it take a step behind.
You've mentioned that we have all forgotten to serve as we are busy taking. In that sense, do you mean serving other people, or are you really talking about what we do for ourselves?
Service truly is born when... No, I completely support service, any kind of service that, you know, someone is drawn to doing. But for me, service truly was born when my heart center opened, Mike. Until then, what I thought was service was, you know, just another form of neediness. I would always give money to the poor so that they would think, you know, oh, what a sweet person this girl is. And, you know, my service also was very needy. And when my heart center opened, there was I experienced formlessness, and I could feel the pain of these people around me, and I just couldn't sit still. It was a part of me that knew this part of me too, and I, you know, taking care of that became natural. It was a natural process. But for me to serve the other person, I had to serve my own truth. It started like, as we shared earlier, it's an inside job. I had to serve the truth within. Allow it to exist in every part of me. Allow the light of truth to be in every darkness within me. And then service was born, because I was serving the truth within me and not my ego. And then it moved to the outside world, where the service became a reality. That's how truth moves. Love moves through service.
Right. Just talking about your book, which we obviously have for quite a while now, do you sell that direct? I mean, you might tell our listeners where that's available from or how they can obtain a copy.
They can get it from my website, powerofillusion.com. If they're in Bay Area, they can get it from East West Bookstore. And in Santa Cruz, there are a couple of bookstores. But the main place would be my website, powerofillusion.com.
Right. I mean, is that available through Amazon?
They ran out of it. It's there. They're out of stock right now.
Out of stock. I see. You're having a good period of sales then, are you? The book is going down very well.
It is picking up, Mike, slowly. I'm hoping that more people would be drawn to it and experience the book the way I have experienced it, because it's a teacher to me even today.
Now, am I correct in thinking that you... you're on radio as well, or was reference to that meaning that, like this program today, that you appear on different radios? I mean, have you got a regular radio program?
Yes, I appear. I give a talk every week on KEST 1450 San Francisco. It is not an internet radio, but people in San Francisco and Oakland can tune in every Wednesday at 6 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Oh, I see. What sort of subjects do you talk about? Presumably, the ones connected with your book.
I think it's a long time since I've talked about my book. These days, I try to help people how to find peace during difficult times, and the stages in truth, and just boundaries. Ego. I talk about everything that I'm going through, and that is more real for me. I share that experience. I share my learnings and what, so that, you know, maybe from my lessons, their life can be a little bit more easier.
So In this life, which is pretty stressful for a lot of people, it would seem that there is quite a large degree of depression experienced. Would you say that following your advice that people could overcome something perhaps as serious as becoming depressed?
Yes. Yes, I was depressed most of my life. This method helped me. I truly believe truth has the ability to heal all aspects of self. I truly believe in that. Truth is such a healer. And if you when we have the technique to release fear and allow the truth to exist more and more, happiness is a definite possibility.
Right. Have you sort of made any CDs, or do you send out newsletters about your work?
Yes, I do. If people can go to my website and shoot me an email, I'll put them in my newsletter. And I do have a lot of radio interviews on my website, a lot of them. So
yeah.
It's a good knowledge base for me.
How often do you send your newsletters out?
Once a month. Sometimes
once
when
a
I
month,
do a couple of talks, I do twice a month. I don't like to go more than
is
that.
Is that a free newsletter?
It's free.
It's free, yeah. Okay. We haven't quite yet reached the end of the program. We've got a few minutes left, and I'll take the last couple of minutes to announce next week's guest. But just looking back on what we've been talking about, have you got any particular message for our listeners that would help them achieve happiness?
I would suggest take it one step a day, baby steps. Try to bring truth in every area of the life, and every communication that comes out or every thought, maybe ask this question, is this true? And if it is not in truth, have the courage to let it go.
And how long ago was it that you actually wrote your book, by the way? When was it published?
2007 beginning was when I released it. It took me 8 months. I would write about 15 minutes every day. That was an agreement I made to myself,
right,
that I won't take more than 15. And it took
But the only reason I asked you that was I wondered if it had been quite some years ago, whether you were already starting to, say, write another book or had another one in mind. I mean, would that be something you might be thinking about?
Right now, yes, I'm writing my second book. But when I wrote this book, I had no intention of writing a book ever.
I was meditating.
And I was told to, I just got the message, okay, go start writing. So, okay, I wanted to pay attention to that, and I just started writing. And after 8 months, I had this wonderful piece of work, and that's how it started.
Right. But when you said you were told, do you mean you were told inwardly, intuitively, or?
I channeled. I was channeling some masters
at that point.
And I didn't know I was. I didn't want to channel. I still have some resistance with that, but but that time it was just, everything was perfectly aligned that, okay, go ahead, right. Because the more open, the more we live truth, the more open we are, and communication with beings become an easy reality, because there is more to the eye than what we can really see.
Yes.
And like my son can see angels, and it's just, the more open you are, all that is needed is the unconscious to open up enough so that you can see that. That's all there is to it. That's what is preventing you from seeing anything.
Right. So whatever entity you were channeling, this is not a regular contact you have. Is it something that goes back over the years that you haven't really followed up, or do you still have contact now?
No, I don't. I wrote the book, and after that, I was not attached to it, Mike. For me, it was a job. I wanted to channel the messages from these teachers, a group of teachers, and there are so many amazing beings who came through that book. And after that, when that was over, it was over for me. There was a part in me for a month I was attached because, you know, I was so insecure, I couldn't live with myself. But after once my self-love and all that was blooming at the same time, now, yeah, that job is over. I didn't have a need to have that connection because I have my teacher with me.
Right. Oh, well, you've had a very, evidently, a very interesting lifetime. And your upliftment, if I may call it that, has obviously achieved a lot for you. You certainly sound a very happy person, and you're very positive in the way you believe that people can achieve the same levels. And, of course, one way they can do it is to buy a copy of your book and also have the benefit from what you already have found through experience. So that's wonderful. I must thank you for coming on to the program. It's been very nice to have you with us. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed what you had to say to them. So thank you very much, Maya. I'm going to use the last minute of the program now to announce next week's guest, who should be Al Kay. I'm waiting for a confirmation email to say that he's still available. But his particular enjoyment is talking about Planet X, which is also known as Nibiru, to do with the Anunnaki. And he's also interested in the Illuminati connection, where the New World Order is concerned. So he sounds quite an interesting person. So thank you for being with me today. And I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.